Now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Ali Shilton.
And I'm Tyra Fraser. Today it's all rather Iris.
The Iris Film Festival and Awards, that is. Seth's been talking to this year's winner.
And Andy's been talking to the person that started it all, Berwyn Rowans.
All that more today, right here on Shout Out.
Boom, 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 boom.
Welcome back.
I wanted to make an entrance. Such fun.
Don't you normally?
Yes. One does always intend to make an entrance.
Yeah.
I haven't been here for about 5 weeks. Have you missed me? Have you mourned for me?
No.
Cried?
No.
Okay. I'll go for longer next time. Wow. I'm glad I've made an impact, guys.
No, it's lovely to have you back. Did you have a nice holiday?
I did, yeah. I mean, I had to put up with Steph for 2 weeks, but other than that, it was glorious.
Poor old Steph. Like last week, Tara was going at you. This week, it's your own girlfriend.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
It was obviously my turn in the barrel because you missed me so much.
I missed you so much, yeah.
Well, you didn't because I was with you.
Oh, right, okay. I was like, I'm just going to go along with that. Yeah, I did.
That's what you said.
Yeah, I did really well, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. The food was amazing. Obviously, Steph was lovely company. You need to improve.
And how much Italian can you speak?
Improve
now?
On your driving a bit, but other than that, pardon?
How much Italian can you speak now?
I can say the odd thing.
You didn't try much at all, did you?
The problem is that my accent.
And how much driving did you do?
None.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
No, yeah. Talking of the Italians.
But I did. I
no
did
driving.
Pay my way.
You have?
The problem is that when I speak in Italian, I sound Italian. But Steph tries.
Sounds Bristolian.
But sounds Bristolian.
Right.
So they think I'm Italian. So they respond in fluent Italian. And then I just sort of nod and go, I'm so sorry, I'm English. And it got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore.
All we needed was the latte macchiatos and the brioche.
Yeah,
with either crema,
latte macchiato
marmalade.
Di cavanato. Por favor.
Yeah.
Por favor.
If you want to know what latte macchiato
is. Por favor.
Yeah.
Por favor is Spanish. It's per favore.
Por favore. Yeah, Italian,
yeah. All right. This is why I've got Google Translate.
That's brilliant, isn't it, Google Translate? It works really well.
I like the app where you can hold your phone over any language and
Google
it translates
Translate,
it live. Yeah, that was brilliant because a couple of the
hold
restaurants.
Hold it over a like, menu.
Yeah. Because it's all in Italian.
Menu's actually really hard because they always use all the posh words for it. Like, if you'd just said fish and chips, I don't know what that was. But they don't, do they?
One thing that we noticed, and once I had noticed, it really tickled me, is that in every restaurant we went to, for every meal, they list every single ingredient of every offer, or like on the menu for each meal.
Oh, right.
So say you're ordering a lasagna, you'd order a lasagna here, right?
Yeah.
But they don't say that. They say like beef, tomato, spinach, ricotta, pasta, lasagna. So we would say the entire thing, which we probably didn't need to. But,
you could have just probably ordered a lasagna. Though,
yeah, or just point it.
Yeah, point. Yeah.
Number 42, please. Cheers.
Yeah, but a lot of things the English language just shortened to something that is meaningless. In like spaghetti bolognese doesn't exist over there.
It's
just
a
ragu. Also, if you ask for a latte, what I love though is the Brits going over there asking for a latte and saying this coffee's a bit weak, and they were
it's
given a
milk.
Cup of
hot
milk.
Milk. Yeah, it's all, and they will bring you hot milk.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd actually sell decaf coffee because, of course, they love their coffee, but it was available everywhere.
Mm.
So, yes, back to work 2 weeks in.
Look like you need another holiday.
Steph. Where are we going next?
Well, if we were still in the EU, I'd be moving to Italy tomorrow, even though there's a fascist.
We were talking about it.
That is the anomaly. That is really odd because there's a fascist government, and I think they've just voted them in for immigration. But there's never been a problem. The years I've been going down to Italy and driving down, stopping in hotels, campsites, going in all the restaurants, travelling on trains, there's never been an issue.
So how
they're friendly.
We've just had a Conservative government in for 12 years. It doesn't mean that we're all right wing, does it? You know, it's.
But how queer and how LGBT present is it?
It's not, yeah. They're trying
Italy's
to actually
not.
Remove the rights over there.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're part of the EU, of course, part of Europe.
Yeah, they'll get they'll
a lot of the
funding,
European laws are required, so they're supposed
but
to.
I thought
but
they had
the they're really resisting it.
They've got to tread carefully. Who? Oh, that's. Are you talking about Spain?
Italy.
I didn't know whether they got a trans member.
They are.
No, I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe they got out now.
Don't know, but.
No, it's a very right-wing government at the moment.
The woman in charge. It's the first fascist government.
Mussolini.
Yeah.
I feel very safe there. We're very liked. We have lovely interactions with
people. That's just because you can talk for England.
You just go for the same place every time.
Yeah, yeah we do. No, we actually do, yeah.
Oh, we know what you're getting. We'll just get the same again.
Yeah. What was that? Sorry, Andy. Sorry.
Fine.
I'm just enjoying having a microphone in my face again. That sounded weird. I knew what I meant.
No, it's film festival day today. So, well, the festival kind of over. There is a bit you can take part on, which we'll hear later when I talk to Berwyn. So if you are a big film buff, if you've not heard of the Iris Festival and the Iris Awards, have you?
I thought it was spelled wrong. I thought it was Irish.
No.
There
were a couple of bits. The joy of pre-record when me and Berwyn were talking, he was trying to talk about the Irish Iris Awards.
Oh, wow.
He was like, oh, that's a real tongue twister.
And then
to make it worse, I then totally mucked up a line and couldn't say what it was. So I edited it out because of the beauty of pre-record. But it is the Iris Film Festival. We've been going about 20 years.
Cool.
Is a festival to celebrate LGBT plus film. And they now, they have done since the start, have a prize you can win, which is going up a bit. I'm not going to spoil it, though, because I talked to Berwyn about that a little bit later. But, Steph, you caught up with the winner of this year, didn't you?
I did, a Palestinian woman, Dima. We spoke a lot off mic, actually, so there was probably a lot more chatting off mic than there was on.
I had that
and
same problem.
It was quite an emotional problem with what is going on in the Middle East for Dima. And I think she's so good at putting it over. I think the interview just speaks for itself. But the film is very powerful. It's a short film and it's a true story. Right, we're at the Iris Awards again and we have visited them regularly. Now, this year's winner is a Palestinian woman. They've won the LGBTQ+ Short Film Award. I'm joined by Dima Hamdan, who says they're honoured because, as you see it, Dima, as being the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it said on the website. So who am I to say otherwise? It's the Oscars of short, LGBT short films. So it's great.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's go back in time a little bit, growing up and all that. Were you always theatrical? Did you always have that like film bent or theatrical bent in your life?
I think it must have been at the age of 13 when I was watching a film that I decided, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if I became a filmmaker? I grew up in a home where, we'd watch films on a regular basis. Growing up in Kuwait in the 80s, you didn't have access to a lot of films, but there was this one specific program in Kuwait called Cinema Club, which comes on TV on Friday night. And it would be like a special movie of the evening. And the presenter would have an introduction to the movie and then we would watch it. And then he would provide this thorough analysis after the movie. So I was like, this is what I was watching as a child every Friday night. And it might have been Steven Spielberg's Empire of the Sun that I was just absolutely blown away by it. Not that I watch Steven Spielberg's films for a variety of reasons right now, but that's besides the point. I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if I became a storyteller and I could make something as spectacular as this? Mm. It was me like being mesmerized by the process of making a film. And obviously, growing up in, a diaspora Palestinian household, my parents witnessed the exodus. They lost their homes and everything they ever owned. My father was 4 years old when 1948 happened and the entire family was displaced and lost everything. My mother, in 1967, was driven out of her home at gunpoint during the Six-Day War, and she and everyone in the town of Tulkarem were basically put on buses, and they were driven to the border with Jordan and told to walk to Amman. So we were being told those stories on a regular basis. You know, my mom would take us through the events of that day. My father would tell us what it was like, you know, losing everything. And everybody around us had stories to tell. So there was a lot of, you know, storytelling in my family. So I grew up around that. We had a lot of cultural events as, you know, Palestinian kids in Kuwait. They would take us to recitals. They would teach us, you know, traditional Palestinian songs and, you know, songs of resistance. And they're all full of stories. So I think all of that percolated for a very long time before these two things converged, you know, being mesmerized by cinema and then having, you know, that reservoir of stories. And then these two somehow very organically came together and kind of evolved over time.
Mm. About a year ago, we had a couple of Palestinian trans men on the show, one from a Palestinian refugee camp in the south of Lebanon, and the other one from the north, a Druze Christian. Mm. So it just goes to show that when love happens, it does happen, and it doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. And obviously one of them was a Muslim, the other one a Christian, but they tell a lot of stories, and it's very important, like yourself, that you keep those stories going, that you don't forget them. It's your history and your people's history, and it should never be left aside because you've moved on. And it's how humanity will move forward, by hopefully at some point or learning, and we move away from fascist governments and that, and have peace. Because I'm sure that there are a lot of Israelis who don't want this. So we're actually protesting against Netanyahu and the horrors that he's bringing on the Palestinian peoples. And that also goes across to Russia, where you've got Putin, and to lesser effect, you've got things like that happening in Italy and Hungary that are very anti-LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. So is the film that you made a Palestinian story?
The film is about choices, about difficult moral choices, and it's about resistance. This is what it's about. The film is based on true stories because the Israelis very often go after gay Palestinian men, and they blackmail them by secretly filming them having sex. And then they give them the option: you either collaborate or the video goes viral and we expose you. And I wanted to do this film because the thing is, very unfortunately, you know, Israel has this reputation of being the gay capital of the world and being a very, very tolerant place. Well, you can't claim that title when you are oppressing and blackmailing and dehumanizing and violating other gay Palestinian men. And I do hold members of the LGBT community to account when they don't see that. I have to be very honest about this. And I'm very lucky that I'm an ally of the community in general, but I also know there are a lot of allies within the community who see this. So the film was first of all exposing this, but also it was about understanding a Palestinian family's predicament. I think it's very easy to shout over traditional forces in any society. And I don't believe that that's how you make change. I believe you need to negotiate with people. And in some circumstances, yes, you negotiate with patriarchy. So Blood Like Water envisages what happens to the parents of the gay Palestinian man having to make a moral decision. You know, do we, what do we do? Do we disown our son? Do we collaborate with the Israeli military because we don't want our reputation to be tarnished? And by collaborating, we are abandoning our core values and beliefs. You know, we are a proud Palestinian home. Or do we make the difficult decision of saying to the Israelis, well, screw you, you can do whatever you want. We're not afraid of you. And we will take the brunt of the social humiliation, because that's what it means to fight. So the story that I'm telling, Steph, is in the wider context of what we are going through right now as Palestinians. There's a genocide in Gaza. There are war crimes being committed, not just in the Gaza Strip, but all across Palestine. Everybody, not just the queer community, everyone in Palestine right now is at equal risk. There is an attempt to annihilate the Palestinian people. And although Blood Like Water was done before the genocide started, right now, I hope that when people see it, whether in Palestine or abroad, they see it as part of, this is what a Palestinian has to deal with every single day. This is what it means to resist, because resistance means making very difficult choices. Resistance is not easy. It's putting your life at risk. It's putting your reputation and your honor at risk. It is making huge, huge sacrifices. So I don't want it to, it's not divorced from the realities. A lot of what happens, the attacks in the Gaza Strip, the incursions in the West Bank, not all of it is cyber intelligence and technological prowess. A lot of it is human intelligence. And you can be sure that some of that human intelligence are vulnerable gay Palestinian men like Shadi. And I'm basically saying to my people, imagine what it was like if you accepted those people, and just how empowering that would be, that you remove that tool from the Israeli occupation that knows it's a very easy tool to use against you and against yourselves. So imagine how empowering it would be to tell them, no, we are not afraid of you. This is just another form of resistance that no one has thought of, really, which this is why I made the film.
Dima, the way Hezbollah and Hamas treat LGBTQ people. So you're saying that what Israel is doing is wrong, and rightly so. And you have the Palestinians have a lot of support from the queer community in the Western world. How do you feel about the way that a lot of the Arab world treat LGBTQ people in the area, the Middle East?
Well, it's very problematic. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this situation and I wouldn't be making a film about it. Of course, it goes without saying that there is a serious problem with the way that the queer community is being treated. However, very often it is made as if all the traditional forces, all the homophobic forces and powers all across the Muslim part of the world, because somehow we always, you know, described as such, treat the gay community in the same way. First of all, in Palestine, homosexuality is not criminalized. There is a situation where they don't go on a witch hunt. Some people might be surprised to know this, but Hezbollah and Hamas, you can say all sorts of things about them. I'm not going to get into that. But they're not going on a witch hunt, trying to find gay people and throw them off the rooftops and, you know, hang them from the trees. And none of those horror stories, which very often are circulated by, I don't know, Zionist groups on social media. This is not what happens. The reality on the ground is keep it to yourselves and no one bothers you. So there is it's not an ideal live and let live situation. And we have got to fight for people's right to be visible and people's right to be accepted. But I think in the West, there has to be an understanding that just because a certain LGBT agenda works in the West, it does not mean that it is the right LGBT agenda for another culture and another society. And I've got queer friends who are Palestinian, who are Lebanese, who are Syrian, who don't necessarily, this is where there are clashes within, if you want to call it, the global LGBT community or the movement. I don't see it as one big global movement. There are local movements, there are local groups that have their own priorities, and that's the thing that has to be respected and taken into consideration.
Yeah, I think people should remember as well, it's not just the Middle East. There's big issues across Europe, including the Eastern countries like Russia. Its sphere of influence that goes into other countries that has become very anti-LGBTQ. So it is not just an Arab world issue. It's an issue across the world currently because we seem to be drifting to the right. And that means trouble for the queer community. It means trouble for minorities everywhere, yes, whether queer or not. And that is what humanity has to pull back from.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Dima, we've run right out of time, but what a powerful chat we've had. And I hope your words resonate across the world when this goes out this week. Thank you so much for your time and good luck going forward.
Thank you so much. And I really look forward to hearing the interview and sharing it when it's done.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
Hey, it's Zoe from Cat Bear here. You're listening to Shout Out Radio, and this is our new single, Carry On, by Cat Bear.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's Cat Bear, which you may remember they performed at Bristol Pride
they
this
did,
summer.
Yes.
So lovely of Zoe to say hello to us. There. That's if you're listening live, that single is out tomorrow. I just had my place and I just turned my phone and it rotated and now I've lost it again.
No.
Hang on. Let me find it again. The single is out tomorrow on the 18th. They're coming to Bristol as well. That was the bit I was actually looking for at the end of the month. Oh, yeah, there you go. The single's out on the 28th and they're here performing. I've lost the date now. I had it right in front of me. Don't you hate it when that happens?
Yeah. That's all right. We're doing news now, so you can...
There you go.
There
were at Rough Trade in Bristol on the 25th. Tickets are on sale now. So if you want to go see them, that's where you'll see them. So we did try and get an interview with them, but we couldn't make the times work. So hopefully we'll catch up with them again soon.
Yeah, that'd be
great. Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, should we find out what else is going on in the world?
Why not?
All right.
Just a bit.
Over to you then, Tara.
Just a bit.
Shocks me that I've not got the news. It's been a long time since
Should
I did
it in a Scottish accent.
Okay.
Okay, let's go.
Is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
The singer and actor Gavin Krill has passed on to the realm of our LGBTQI plus ancestors at the age of 48 after a brief struggle with a rare form of cancer. He received a Grammy Award, a Tony Award, a Drama Desk Award and a Laurence Olivier Award across the course of his career and appeared in notable Broadway productions of Le Cage aux Folles, Mary Poppins and Fame. Wikipedia reports that Gavin was a gay man and contributed significantly to LGBTQI plus rights activism as well. He was one of the founders with Rory O'Malley and Jenny Kenelos of Broadway Impact, an LGBT activist group that mobilised the New York theatre community in the pursuit of marriage equality. He was also a regular on the LGBTR family vacation cruise with Rosie O'Donnell. Theatres in Toronto, the West End and on Broadway announced that they dimmed their lights as a tribute to Krill and a candlelit vigil was held in London.
On its 25th anniversary, the sex-positive gay and bi men's hookup site Squirt.org has partnered with Building Healthy Online Communities to provide their members with reliable health information whilst they explore their sexuality through various site features, including video chats, pictures, erotic stories and a global directory of cruising hotspots. Members are prompted to add safer sex preferences and vaccination statuses to their profiles to find like-minded members and encourage conversations around safer sex. The Australian gay men's magazine DNA takes up the story and reports that Andrew Nolan, head of dating at Pink Triangle Press, who owns Squirt, expressed excitement about the partnership, highlighting a 2023 survey by Community Marketing Insights indicating that Squirt members' top health concerns were related to mental health, HIV, and preventing or treating STIs. Building Healthy Online Communities is a consortium of public health leaders and dating app owners working together to improve queer and trans health. You can visit bhocpartners.org to learn more.
A reminder for us was hearing Meghan Trainor performing her classic hit single, All About the Bass, on the Co-op's in-house radio station. We checked in with some body-sized liberation accounts to see what this queer-related movement was doing this autumn. This Is Thin Privilege blog calls out bigotry from both right-wing and the theoretical left, noting we are pro-trans and anti-TERF. Meanwhile, no more Mr. Nice Fat, a gay man who identifies with the bear scene, makes clear the links between his and other people's lives by running appeals for people fleeing the conflict in the Middle East without taking any position on the violence that has escalated there. He also has a question that would be equally relevant to TERFs when he asks, why are fat phobes always so obsessed with us? Aren't you supposed to be better than us according to y'all? Why don't you have your own life and hobbies, etc.?
Well said. Now, Alison Barfield, writing at the transport website Motor Biscuit, writes that the Toyota Corporation have turned their back on events supporting LGBTQIA+ and diversity causes of all types after an orchestrated hate campaign mounted by angry heterosexual white men. Apparently, Toyota was getting too woke and some people were mad about it, says Alison. Toyota Motor Corporation shared a memo with 50,000 United States employees and 1,500 dealerships that states it will now narrow community activities to align with STEM education and workforce readiness only. Plus, it is ending its participation in the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index and other corporate culture surveys. Some employees effectively are being silenced. Whilst it's unclear if the boycott harmed Toyota's sales of trucks, SUVs and cars, it is clear that conservatives got upset.
LGBTQI+ ally and progressive political commentator Carol Vorderman, who in recent years has been presenting on LBC Talk Radio out of London, has announced that she is discontinuing her Sunday show after a health scare. She ended up spending a night in hospital after feeling burnt out, under the weather and with pains across her body. According to media website RCS Radio Today, Carol says she'll still be a part of the LBC family from time to time, teasing to stand by for more details. Thanking listeners and her new friends at LBC, she concluded, "I'll be continuing to make a lot of mischief and call out corruption and wrongdoing. That isn't stopping, but for now, an ever so slightly less frantic chapter begins." LBC told on the radio.co.uk, "We completely understand Carol's decision. Her health comes first, and everyone here at LBC sends their best wishes. Carol's show has been an essential Sunday listen, and while we know many people will miss her, we look forward to having her back on LBC from time to time soon." Carol Vorderman started her media career on Channel 4's flagship afternoon quiz programme Countdown, where she hosted for 23 years. In recent years, Vorderman has developed more of her political journalism and has hosted several programmes for LBC Radio. She's been an ally to LGBTQI+ people in her role on the station.
Yes, all the best to Carol. Now, finally, a Palestinian woman has won the world's largest LGBTQ+ short film award. Dima Hamdan said that she was deeply honoured to receive the £30,000 Iris Prize because it was both the Oscars of the LGBTQ short film award for film world, and it comes from a community that has increasingly voiced its support for Palestine in recent years. Former Plaid Cymru leader and gay politician Adam Price, who chaired the international jury, called the film Blood Like Water an important reminder that queer people exist everywhere, including in Palestine at a time of war and occupation. Hamdan is a self-taught filmmaker and journalist based in Berlin. "In order to survive these dark times, I find strength by envisaging a future when all of this will be over. In that vision, I take solace knowing that in the Iris Film Prize, its wonderful team and the jury will hold a special place in my heart for standing with us and helping to amplify our voices." Festival director Berwyn Rowland says that he was proud of the event and shared stories not necessarily covered by the mainstream. He added, "This year, the filmmakers have focused on the more serious aspects of LGBTQ+ life. Although there are many dark times, there is still hope."
Well, it's been another busy week for LGBTQI+ news and politics. We've covered just a few stories here, so why not check out our website for more? We are available at shoutoutradio.lgbt. See you all next week for more stories.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
And Ezra Peregrine.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
I'm Doremi, I'm Barton Baker. Haven't played that one for a while. It's a bit of a catchy one. I've got Minnie the Moocher coming up for you later too, a dance version of that. Minnie the Moocher is a very old song.
It is, yes.
Doremi fire so lati do.
Dance version of that, so. You mentioned in the news there, Dima Hamden, who Steph spoke to earlier. Well, the Irish Film Festival, not Irish.
Sorry.
Berwyn was dead right. He said that happened. So I managed to catch up with Berwyn, though, who organised it, and it's in its 18th year. So have a listen to this.
Now, it's been that time of year again when a certain rather big these days festival has just taken place, and the winner being announced, that being the Iris Film Festival. Steph is talking to this year's winner. I'm very pleased to say I'm joined by the organiser of it all, Berwyn. A very warm welcome to Shout Out.
Well, thank you, Andy, for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
So now, nearly 20 years it's been going, hasn't it? Take me right back to the start, because there are some people who won't have heard of it. How did it all come about in the first place?
There are a number of reasons why it came about. The main thrust behind Iris was, I think as a gay man, I was aware that, you know, I was seeing myself on the screen in movies and specifically in short films. And some of them were very good. And we were, well, much younger at that stage and very pompous. And the desire was to encourage excellence in storytelling. And that's all we wanted to do, really. We wanted to increase the number of films, the number of stories that people could experience. But at the same time, we wanted the quality to be better as well, because it's one thing to see yourself on the screen. It's another matter when there are barriers to those stories. And when I say barriers, I'm talking about bad lighting, bad sound, and unfortunately, underdeveloped scripts. So what we wanted to do was to create a prize that would celebrate excellence and a prize that would focus the attention of the audience, but also, importantly, the filmmakers. So we came up with something called the Iris Prize because, you know, 20 years ago, the catastrophic impact of COVID, cost of living crisis, and the, you know, substantial increase in broadband capacity to offer us other ways of consuming content, those hadn't happened. And it felt as if almost every town of a certain size would have a film festival. So we were quite determined what we didn't want to do was to have another film festival. So that's why the Iris Prize was created. It was a prize, there's cash, and it continues to be the world's largest short film prize. On that specific element of the festival, nothing has changed. You know, we are still annually identifying a filmmaker, and that filmmaker takes the prize and they get to make another short film. This year, you know, we were thrilled to announce that the Michael Bishop Foundation, who one of our strong, passionate supporters, have allowed us to increase the prize. So beginning in 2025, the world's largest short film prize will increase from 30,000 to 40,000.
Wow.
So that's good news for filmmakers. And quite naturally, they're interested in the cash so that they can get on and tell their stories. We also share, you know, we've also matured and developed relationships, because the success of Iris has, without a shadow of a doubt, been focused on partnerships. So we've always worked with other people, or people and organizations have worked with us. So our relationship with Channel 4, for example, it's now in its fifth, sixth year. It's been going for some time. And that enables us to find another audience. All the British films, the 15 British films competing for the Best British Award, all of those, as of Saturday, with the festival closed on that Saturday night, for those who were unable to join us in Cardiff, you could see the first programme of British shorts on Channel 4 television. And Channel 4's catch-up service has all 15 of them available free of charge. And they're going to be there for the next 12 months. So that brings millions more into what we wanted to achieve, which is giving people a chance to see stories about the gay experience, LGBTQ+. That, you know, let's be honest, the mainstream has a tendency to either avoid or just simply ignore. But one of the things that, you know, all the audience surveys point to is that they also enjoy their time in the city. So we don't exist as a festival in isolation. We immerse ourselves in the city. So there are international karaoke competitions in the Golden. There are evenings in Mary's, Pulse, King's, Queer Emporium. You know, all of the gay venues are involved in making sure that Iris is fun and memorable, and hopefully, you know, encouraging people to think, yeah, I want to go back.
You're quite an aspirational guy, and it's grown a lot in the last 20 years. What's the future for it? What's missing that you haven't managed to bring to it yet that you, if you could?
The journey of two guys who came over as part of the Windrush. Generation, they're in their 70s, yes. And they're both married, but actually having an affair with each other.
Wow.
And I will not tell you any more because I will ruin it for you, but I'm into about episode 3, yeah. And it's a very interesting story. So
another one to watch out for. My Spanish friend told me you need to look out for the secret river.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for this week. As always, we are always on the hunt for those of you who make good guests. So if you want to come on the show and talk to us, or if you want to get involved in community radio too.
If that's you, get in touch. Head to our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Next week, we're sticking with acting, aren't we?
Oh, can't do that for a saving life. I'll stick to radio.
So it's going to be an Ayres show, that's what it'll be. From myself, from Terry, from Ayres, from Steph and Tara, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye!
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.